I'm told by a top campaign advisor that Donald Trump will be making this decision over the next 24 hours as to who he should pick for his running mate. I'm told this is not a division, but it is very much under discussion. It's just days, maybe even hours away.
We were really honored to have not only Mr. Trump, but a number of his children and son-in-law join us at the governor's residence. Nothing was offered. Nothing was accepted.
What Boris Johnson is going to do now, I think everybody here outside of 10 Downing Street would have been scratching their heads. Yet, very interesting to see he's now foreign secretary.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. 5:08. Today is Thursday. It is July 14th, 2016. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. Welcome to another business day. I'll let open there sink in for just a second. They did say Boris Johnson was named foreign secretary. And there's a photograph that appears this morning in one of the London newspapers of one of the members of the House of Commons. Her face is, the reaction on her face is priceless to the fact that basically Boris Johnson has been named Secretary of State for the UK. We'll continue to follow that story, obviously, through the morning as the new Prime Minister takes office there. We can report, however, that the cat is still there and doing well this morning. That is what we know for sure about what is going on in Great Britain. Lots of hiring and firing going on across the pond this morning as a new leader takes hold in Great Britain. That will be one of our big stories as we move through the morning here on The Opening Bell. Let's get to the WGN Market Desk first, though. The overnight intel, Asian shares are mixed in cautious trading Thursday. Today, head of Bank of England's meeting. The China GDP data is released tomorrow. Investors digesting all of this. British news, the cabinet members of Theresa May, her selections. Japan's Nikkei closed up nearly 1%. The yen weakened against the dollar. Hong Kong's Hang Seng. Australia's S&P ASX 2000, 200, and South Korea's indices also higher. China's Shanghai Composite fell in New York yesterday. The Dow and S&P inched to new records, stretching the winning streak that began with a strong U.S. jobs report on Friday into a fourth day last Friday. The S&P 500 edged up just a bit, and the Dow rose about 24 points. The NASDAQ Composite lost about 17 points. Oil prices are rebounding, with benchmark U.S. crude up about 50 cents, trading now above $45 a barrel, closing at $44.75 a barrel in New York on Wednesday. Here's what we know is coming up today. Inflation has been running below the Federal Reserve's preferred 2% pace, but last month there were signs it may be picking up a little. This morning we'll get an update. The Labor Department releases the Producer Price Index for June at 7:30 Chicago time. May's report showed an increase of 0.4%, while core inflation, which excludes energy and food, was up about 0.3%. That could drive the markets as they open this morning at 8:30. Also, this morning, the Labor Department provides fresh jobless claims numbers. Claims have remained below 300,000 for 70 weeks now. That's the longest running streak since 1973. We'll see if we can keep that going. Later, Freddie Mac will update the latest average mortgage rates across the country. They fell last week. From the corporate world, Delta Airlines and J.P. Morgan Chase are on the calendar today to report quarterly financial results, and that'll happen before the market opens. We probably expect them before this broadcast is over today. There is a big question raised a lot in the tech world. Why are not more women involved? And the new head of the CEO of Technori is finding this out first person. Scott Catoon is with us this morning here on The Opening Bell. Good morning, Mr. CEO.
Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. You know, this is something we've talked about before on the show a lot, and it's something that you sort of had a run-in with as you organized an event, one of your first Technori events, and that is the lack of women participating. Is this something that there just aren't women in the startup world and doing this kind of stuff, or they just didn't want to come to this event, or do we have a big problem here? Scott? Sounds like we lost Scott there. We'll try to reconnect our connection with Scott, the head of Technori. We've lost our connection with him this morning. We want to show you some numbers. Chicago has been linked as one of the places where at least salaries are not in line with men in terms of tech jobs. That was a salary report we had a couple of weeks ago. But Scott, you're back now. I don't know if you heard my question, and that is do we have a big problem here? Are there just not women getting into this tech field, or are they just not showing up at meetings?
I don't think it's a problem. I mean, it's a problem the way that they're represented. I don't think that they're represented the same numbers that, their counterpart male founders are. Chicago is actually, I think, leading in the way of allowing, you know, having an inclusive ecosystem where women can have some of the same opportunities as men, albeit not equal in pay and some of those things yet, which obviously need to be worked on. Chicago's in a good spot to lead the way, and we're hoping to sort of be that tool that helps push the initiative throughout Chicago and obviously throughout the tech community in the whole country.
We've obviously showcased a lot of them here on this show. You have as well on yours about just in the few weeks we've been doing this, the Ballot Ready is one example. The Brides Group is another. Lots of women CEOs that are in positions in Chicago. So what has to be done to sort of foster this or maybe fertilize this a little?
Well, I think honestly it's awareness, and one of the big things that we're going to try to do to sort of achieve that is I don't think that you just pick women and say, oh, you know, like, let's just prop them up and here you go, because I don't think that that solves the problem, and that's not the kind of, you know, I don't think that does them justice. What we want to do is say, listen, if we stick a bunch of female companies that are amazing next to a bunch of male-led companies that are amazing, you'll realize that there's very few differences. If, as an investor, you may not look at female companies because if you've had a bias or you've had bad experiences or you just don't know about them, you know, then how would you possibly ever decide to invest and give them the opportunity? But if we showcase a bunch of male companies in the same exact theme and industry, right next to a bunch of female-led companies in the same exact industry, and you see, wow, that's a really cool company too, you start to look at them on the exact same level, and you start to lose that bias. That's our hope.
We're on with the CEO of Technori, Scott Catoon. You can follow Technori at Technori at Catoon on Twitter.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It is 520. Welcome back to the program. We're on with CEO of Technori, Scott Catoon. And Scott, before our break, we were talking about women in business, and I was looking recently. There was a conference in San Francisco, a little forum that they put on out in that area of the country. We'll just say that area of the country because I don't really like giving them more attention than they deserve, because they get a lot of attention, and I don't really like that. I'm kind of a Chicago guy, but anyway, I digress. The gender gap and how to defeat it was the topic of this, and there were a lot of well-known female entrepreneurs and tech people on that panel. And the discussion was just, hey, the world of guys, how do you move forward? Do you make your feminine qualities known? Do you make this gender gap an issue? I don't know if you got a chance to see this, but there were some good ideas that came out of that.
I did. Actually, you know what's really cool is 2 days ago, one of the hosts of that panel reached out to me and said, hey, we noticed what you're doing here in Chicago, and we thought we wanted to kind of just sort of check in and see if there's any way to collaborate. So that's something that's in the works.
Well, women, the findings of some of this were kind of interesting. Women don't have to be programmers or coders to, you know, be in this world. Some of the men who are in this world don't even know that, right? And then also, just being a woman in a room can change things for the better. That's something I think that might be overlooked. It adds that perspective.
Yeah, I think that for sure. I think, I mean, honestly, I'm not a technical CEO. I mean, I know how to do a website, sort of. A couple of years ago, I learned how to get myself into some sort of ability to recognize technology components. But I'm not a technical person. There's plenty of room for many different qualities, and female CEOs and management people have different sets of skills than their male counterparts in some cases. And in other cases, similar or better skills. And it just depends on what you want to do and how you hone those skills. And I think seeing female-led companies be successful, seeing them raise money, seeing them do all the same things that the males are doing is the piece of awareness that's most necessary. I think the more high quality, you know, at least at Technori, like the thing that I've kind of said at our last event was, You know, it's not enough to just say, we're going to make sure that 50% of our showcase is female. That doesn't do anyone justice if you just pick them because it's female-led. But picking high-quality companies that are female-led is what will make a difference. If people can see, wow, that's a great company, that's a great company, that's a great company. Oh, I didn't realize those two companies were female-led. That's what you want. You want them to realize that it doesn't matter what the gender is. You should give the company opportunity because they're a great company.
Right. And sort of along those lines, too, I know we're two guys here talking about women's issues.
Yeah, right.
So I take it with a grain of salt. But, the research I've done, at least one of the other big parts of this, and women agree who are in this area, is that when you're in this startup world and you're trying to get this product off the ground, you have to hire the best people regardless of their gender. And so one of the things that came out of this meeting was there needs to be more in the hiring pool of both. And so that may go beyond Technori. It may go beyond anything we can say here to that world of education and guidance counselors pushing people, and especially women, to go into these fields.
Well, it absolutely does. It starts there. It starts as a child. You know, the reality is on our application for last month, we only had one application come in that was female, female-led company. And then that comes not because they're not out there. That comes because they don't feel like they have a chance. It's not worth their time to apply. And if you go back to us children, if you're not basically given that option, then you just sort of grow up thinking like, well, I got to fight my way to the top. I'm not going to have the support I need and deserve. And so you just sort of go it alone. And I think by having organizations like Women Tech Founders and some of these other, you know, Miss Tech and Wisdom that come out and say, hey, you know, they work with kids and introduce you to engineering or introduce you to just leading companies or entrepreneurship or innovation or, you know, any number of things. If they're working with you as a kid from the get-go, you go, oh, there are organizations. And our hope was by partnering with Women Tech Founders that many of those female-led companies and entrepreneurs that previously didn't apply to Technori for whatever reason would go, okay, Women Tech Founders, who is our organization that represents us, our member head, is partnered with Technori, and therefore, you know, we should at least give it a shot. We know that they are looking out for us in one way or another.
I want to touch on a couple of other things on one of your recent podcasts. By the way, you can find Scott on WGN Plus with Technori Podcast. You had the CEO of SMS Assist on, Michael Rothman, and they're one of the Chicago startups that really are going gangbusters. They got a $150 million investment from Goldman Sachs. What are they doing right? What did Michael tell you about his success?
Yeah, I mean, Michael and I really nerded out over the property management systems and real estate, which is something that most people don't probably like or don't really know a whole lot about. Basically, what he did was he automated a very, very annoying and complex problem. If you're a property manager, whether it's for a large, you know, condo association or for a commercial real estate, you know, centers, which is what I was used to do, there's many different things from price fluctuation to picking HVAC people to groundskeeping to asphalt to all these different things. And there's hidden costs in all of it. And he found a way to automate that system so that a large organization can basically say, we'll basically open bid, open marketplace. The prices are all sort of, you know, best prices sort of come to the top. And he found an area, a niche, and he basically said, listen, we are going to dominate this one little niche. And they've done it. And honestly, like from a growth standpoint, he just managed to hire really, really good people and say, we're not going to get outside of our own skill set. We're going to create a software and we're going to just pound the pavement with it. And this is what we do. This is who we are. And now they've, you know, Rahm Emanuel's in their office announcing, a couple hundred people that they're hiring. And they're just, they probably are growing faster than anyone in the city of Chicago, which has led them to more than a $1 billion valuation, the unicorn, as we like to say, after Goldman Sachs invested $150 million in them.
And they've expanded to 565 employees, 175 just in the last year. Even though they've gone with this automation process, they're still hiring humans.
The process itself is automated. The thing about their deal is, which is unique, is normally in tech we talk about these automated softwares that eliminate jobs. In their situation, it actually does more for jobs because the humans still do the work on both ends. The humans do the sales. The humans are the ones that help, you know, put the contractors in the system. And all of the different people who are contractors sort of freelancing around, leaving flyers and emails and calls, cold calls, to the property management companies, basically didn't really have a hope. You know, they had no hope of really being hired because you had your regular Joe that you used for everything. Well, once we get you on an automated system, we know that during this time and this time and this time, prices are better for these people, or the opportunities are, you know, they're closer in proximity and therefore they're more timely, you know, blah, blah, blah. When you start doing that, all of a sudden it opens the property managers across the country's eyes to all the different, you know, people that they can hire. And so they do hire different people. And so it's not only does he do an amazing job growing the company and, like you said, adding 175 jobs of last year, but actually creates jobs and creates opportunities for those in the industry that previously maybe didn't have as much opportunity.
Scott, we're running out of time. You got about 30 seconds. So your next TechNori is July 26th. What's the topic and where do we get tickets and what time is it?
Yep, go to technori.com. There's tickets. It's on Eventbrite as well. The topic is curated convenience. It's very cool. It's about finding ways to get what you want digitally. So whether it's a lost and found or you're trying to figure out a way to find someone to babysit your kid, we've got Genevieve Thiers from Chime by Center City. We've got a very cool thing. Our first ever LA-based company is flying into Chicago to be a part of this TechNori event. And speaking of the female-led stuff, we promised last month that we were going to try to get to 50% of our showcase being represented by females. We have achieved it. We will have 50% of this month's showcase represented by females in the breaks and news on your show. The headline keynote is going to be Coco Mears, who sold pretty quick to Group on a couple months ago.
All right. Very good. CEO of TechNori, Scott Catoon, on with us this morning on the opening bell at Catoon at TechNori. Thanks, Scott. Have a good day.
You too. Thanks, Steve.
From ABC News, tech trends, keeping kids safer in cars. In just the last 6 years, more than 220 children have died of heat stroke after becoming trapped inside vehicles. That according to kidsincars.org. But new technology from Evenflow called SensorSafe would alert drivers with a chime when the car is turned off, but a child is still strapped in a car seat. Emily Thomas of Consumer Reports tested the device in 25 different cars. She says it worked in most vehicles, but not all of them.
If your car is model year 2008 or newer, the standard receiver will work. But if you have a hybrid vehicle or your car stops and starts when idling, then you need to get the alternate receiver.
The SensorSafe chest clip is activated when buckled and when the car is in motion. It communicates wirelessly with the car through a receiver that gets plugged into the car's diagnostic port.
The SensorSafe technology isn't perfect yet, but it definitely shows the most promise.
Several automakers are also working to make rear seat reminders standard in new vehicles. With Tech Trends, I'm Karen Chase, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It is 5:40. Welcome back to the program as we focus this morning on the state of business in Illinois, the climate, business climate, not only here but across the country. There's a new report out, a new study out showing America's top states for business in 2016 from CNBC. And joining us this morning from CNBC is Scott Cohn. Good morning, Scott. Welcome to the opening bell. I know you guys have the closing bell, but we have the opening bell.
Well, so you get it all started. That's good.
We start the ball rolling for you. But this is a really comprehensive survey. Talk to me a little bit about the motivation for doing it and what you found.
Well, this is actually the 10th year that we've done this, and it really started out with just a conversation about why is it that companies decide to locate in one state versus another. And so we started this study 10 years ago, looking at all of the different things that the states are saying about themselves, the way that they try and attract businesses, and how that stands up to the real data. There's a whole lot of information out there to evaluate the states and rank the states, and so we take that and we put it all together, and it comes out into this study. And this year, the top state for business across the country is actually Utah, which has always been very competitive since we started this. They put a little bit more resources into education that helped them overcome one of their biggest weak spots, and their economy is just clicking along there. They have something that they call Silicon Slopes. That's the area around Salt Lake City, that is this high-tech community that is really starting to rival Silicon Valley in terms of the money that it's bringing in and the jobs that it's creating. So they get top state honors this year.
The thing about this survey, the study that I like is it is not an opinion survey. It is based on metrics. It's based on various different categories: workforce, cost of doing business, infrastructure, education, quality of life, technology and innovation, all of the important aspects. And again, because it's not an opinion survey, it really does give a good snapshot of what's happening. Illinois. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that was always the idea, is we wanted to try and, you know, take out the spin and see what the data actually shows about what the states are doing.
Well, as I scroll down, I'm still scrolling. Okay. Illinois is way down on the list. What did you find about Illinois?
Well, Illinois came in 24th, so it's not as bad as some. But you know, you're talking about it every day, the budget situation in Illinois, and that hurts in our economy category of America's top states for business, because we look not just at the basic economic measures like job growth and economic growth and things like that, but we also look at the state's finances. And as you know, Illinois is a state with the worst credit rating in the country. You've had these budget issues, and so that drags you down to 35th in economy. But there's things that Illinois does really well. Illinois is generating and attracting an awful lot of capital. So one of our categories is access to capital. There's venture capital, people who come in and invest to start up a business, but also small business lending and things like that. And we look at all of that, and Illinois leads the nation when it comes to access to capital. But then you come down to other issues like a category we call business friendliness, which is about regulations, and Illinois ranks 48th. So there you go.
Yeah, and you mentioned there about the capital and the tech stuff. That's, you know, we don't have a Silicon Slopes here, but we do have, as we just in our last segment talked about, 1871, which is the Google incubator. We have all of the other great things that are happening here. Lots of Fortune 500 companies are here. But still, this atmosphere, this idea that is permeating across the country that we're not a good place to do business is sort of taking hold, isn't it?
It very well may be, and I think that there's some good reason for that, but you still have a lot going on there. As you said, you know, in our category of technology and innovation, Illinois comes in, you know, top tier in the number 11. You have all the great research institutions, everything that's going on there and has been for years, and the critical mass of business, both in the Chicago area and downstate. So there's a lot going on there, but because the state doesn't have its fiscal house in order, and because it's known as a place with a lot of regulation, union-friendly states don't typically do well in our study, although Minnesota has done really well the last couple of years. There are things that are working against Illinois. Some of them you have a lot of control over. And so we'll see what happens.
We have been fighting this battle over education, not only on a state level, but here in Chicago as well. It's surprising to see that we rank fourth in this survey on education.
Right. And this is, you know, there is the great basic structure in Illinois, all the great colleges and universities, the test scores do pretty well. And it's something that, you know, you have that going in, you have that advantage going in of being a big established strong state, a lot of higher education institutions, and also the support for higher education over the last few years. Again, it may come from some sort of easy comparisons a few years ago, but, you know, Illinois is funding its colleges and universities, unlike a lot of other states. The test scores at the high school level do pretty well. Again, we're looking statewide. That's not to say that there aren't issues. To be sure, one of the issues that we found when we're looking at education in Illinois is what we call digital learning, and the opportunities to do things on a more advanced level. And Illinois is lagging a little bit. That's probably a question of resources. But you have all the basic fundamentals for a great education system, and that's why in that category you come in fourth.
Everybody who's on this list is probably looking at the bottom of it to see who came in last or near last, and try to avoid some of the things that are happening in those states. What are the worst states, and what are they doing badly?
The worst state, and this state is always at or near the bottom, I almost feel bad for them, is Rhode Island. Rhode Island has some issues that it can't avoid. It's a small state, but Rhode Island has a horrible infrastructure. Their bridges and roads are falling apart, worst in the country. Their economy is bad. They have a lot of some of these same basic legacy old state issues about the economy. And what they're doing about it, and there's a whole big discussion about it in Rhode Island now, is they're charging tolls to commercial trucks for the first time, which there would, I guess, the only state in the Northeast that wasn't doing that. They're trying to do some things, but Rhode Island has a lot of deep-seated issues that have hurt the state. So they come in last. Hawaii always comes in down on our list, partly because, again, it has some inherent disadvantages they can't do anything with. We look at infrastructure and railroads. Well, there's no railroads in Hawaii, so they lose automatically on that. But it's also a ridiculously expensive state, but it is the best quality of life across the country. So they always, every year, have a really low overall ranking on pretty much every category, except they're always first for quality of life. Imagine that.
Right. America's Top States for Business 2016. You can find the full survey, full report at CNBC.com. Scott Cohn, thank you for being with us this morning here on the Opening Bell.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
We'll link to all this information, lots of good information, again, CNBC.com, and we'll put it out on our Twitter account and on online so you can go and find us. They have data tables and charts and maps, and you can see all of the work that went into this really comprehensive survey. Again, America's Top States for Business 2016.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It is 5:52 on the WGN market desk today. The Dow futures are pointing higher, up now 148 points. The S&P NASDAQ futures higher as well. Looks like it might be a positive opening on Wall Street a little bit later on this morning. We have some earnings out as well. We'll tell you about after we check in with Orion Samuelson with commodities. Good morning, Orion.
Good morning, Steve. Well, a little bounce in the cattle market yesterday. As a matter of fact, a pretty good bounce. Bargain hunting came into the market. Short covering snapped the cattle market's two-day losing streak. And so at the end of the day, the October cattle contract was up $1.45, and the August live cattle futures contract ended $2.55 higher at $111.45. Meanwhile, the strong wholesale pork prices helped the pork futures at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. July hog futures, which will expire on Friday, closed up 22 cents a pound, and then we had most actively traded August up 2 cents at $79.20. Corn and soybeans extended rallies yesterday, and traders saying it's basically because of weather. Everybody seems to be looking at a forecast for hot temperatures and less rain as we move into August in a week or two. So at the end of the day yesterday, we saw nearby soybeans up 21 and a quarter cents, nearby corn up 23 cents, and nearby wheat up 5.5 cents a bushel. And one note in the soybean world this week, Chinese didn't buy as many soybeans in June as they did a year ago. And they didn't buy as many beans as expected. So far, hasn't had an impact. That's your money. I'm Orion Samuelson. You have a good day.
All right, you too, Orion. Thank you. As we mentioned at the top of the broadcast, some earnings reports coming in today. We have one before we leave you here on the Opening Bell. Just in, J.P. Morgan Chase is reporting the profits are sliding on weak fee income, a net income of $6.2 billion versus $6.29 billion a year ago. Their interest income up about 6% at $11.7 billion. Their quarter two credit card sales volume up about 8%, merchant and processing up about 13%. But again, the headline from the report on J.P. Morgan Chase, their profits fall, but they did beat estimates from Wall Street.